Kicks it off. Left circle. McNabb. Dorothy have one-timer. Blocked. Rattles around. Score!
Nobody is ever satisfied with one. So we're back for a second hour of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
Michael takes it on his backhand. Forehand pass. Hanifin! Score! Noah Hanifin, power, go, go!
From the Finley Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com, here is Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show rolling along here on a Tuesday. And the VGK Insider Show is brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center, where your first loan is on us. Apply for free at don'tbebroke.com to get up to $5,000. Ryan Wallace, Chris Chapman with you for the next hour or so. And Chris Chapman, it is hour number two, so what are we going to do?
Sticks down, drop the puck for hour number two of the VGK Insider Show.
I still don't understand why we do this an hour into the show.
Well, it's just...
I still don't understand why we're waiting to drop the puck.
That's who we are. It's what we do.
Okay. All right. Well, at least we start on time.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't do the Mike Babcock impersonation anymore.
Why is that?
I don't know. It just feels out of place.
You do some good impressions, though. You do a good Gary Bettman.
It's been a long time since I've done a Gary Bettman.
You know what? I think the next time you have a chance to interview Gary Bettman, I think you should interview him in the voice of your impression of Gary Bettman.
You know what's funny? So I rewind to year one, Stanley Cup final.
Yes.
And it's the only time that I've interviewed Gary Bettman one-on-one.
I was there. I took a photo.
I know. And I remember this interview because it's always kind of stuck with me whenever Gary makes a super obvious joke that he's very clearly making a joke about. Because I open the interview with Bettman like this. Here we are ahead of game one of the Stanley Cup final between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Washington Capitals. Just like everybody predicted in October. And Gary looked at me as if I had three heads, Chapman. Gary looked at me as if he had never heard that joke before. And he just looks at me straight out and he's like, well, if you believe that, you should have a crystal ball. And I'm like, okay. Like, Gary, I was being sarcastic. I was making a joke, Mr. Bettman. And he just, like, he was having none of it.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know, maybe you got to know Gary a little bit to joke with him. Maybe that was my faux pas.
He might be that type of guy.
Like, he has to know you to joke with you or to, like, run with the joke. But it was one of those moments where I was like, clearly he doesn't think that I believe that, right? Like, have you ever had those moments where you say something that you feel like is very obviously a joke?
Yes.
Or very obviously sarcastic, and the person doesn't get it? And when they don't get it, it makes you feel about three inches tall?
Yes, it's definitely like, more awkward for you than it is for them.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, you couldn't just run with it, huh?
Yeah. My favorite part
Thanks,
of that.
Thanks, Gary.
Of the whole Bettman thing, and maybe people don't like, they may not like acknowledge it, or they may not pay attention. I have a nice collection of shoes, dress shoes, sneakers, whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
Gary Bettman wears sneakers with his suits.
Yeah.
And unless you pay attention to the type of thing, you would not know that. But yes, Gary Bettman. And when you are the most powerful man in the sport, you can do whatever the hell you want. If you want to wear Nike trainers with your $3,000 suit, go right ahead. Go right ahead. But like,
there's a lot of walking to do.
Yes, yeah. I mean and if you see him, he's walking all over that building during the game. So I understand it. But like, we're not talking like those leather, like dressy kind of sneakers. Like, he wears like Nike running shoes with his suits. And they're black, so like it doesn't really like stand out. Like it's not like they're bright orange like my running shoes. But yeah, he wears, and I don't know the reason. I don't, you know, I'm not going to ask him. But
doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter, right? When you are the most powerful person in the NHL, you could wear slippers, flip-flops with your suit and no one's going to question it. So, but that was
Hold on. Do you think Mallard would question it?
Behind closed doors he would. I'm sure he's talking to his buddies. He's like, "Hey, How about Gary wearing
what's going on with wearing, the commissioner's
wearing,
shoes?
Yeah, why is he wearing flip flops with that suit? Like what's going on?"
You know, I now that you say that, like I want to see Gary do a press like not a press conference. I want to see him award the Stanley Cup in flip flops. That'd be awesome.
Oh, it'd be great. Imagine like, he goes out there, he's got the Reefs on.
could you imagine a scenario where like Gary Bettman really does play into the I can do whatever I want. Like I'm the commissioner. I'm the commissioner of the National Hockey League. Like if I want to go out there in flip flops and board shorts, I can do that.
Now he could not have gotten away with it because there's already far too many people who accuse him of being a Vegas fan or he breaks the rules for Vegas or like that's my favorite narrative. Like, oh, Gary cheats for the Golden Knights. He breaks the rules. He lets them get away with everything. Like if he would have come out last year dressed like Elvis and awarded the Stanley Cup to Mark Stone dressed like Elvis, like that would have been epic. But for obvious reasons, he could not do that. But
Gary loves Vegas.
He does
and
like
hates
Vegas.
Canada, yes. Apparently.
Oh, he doesn't. Listen, when you have seven teams and one of them is the Toronto Maple Leafs, so you already are down to six.
Another one is the Ottawa Senators. So
well,
you're down to five.
They are a team, to be fair.
So you're down to five.
You're down to five. Your odds are not great.
I mean, Connor Hellebuck plays on the Jets, so you're down to four.
He does in the playoffs.
The Montreal Canadiens don't make the playoffs, so you're down to three.
Except the one year that they did make the playoffs, and they somehow make the Stanley Cup final.
They go to the Stanley Cup final. Yeah.
I'm still trying to figure that one out, right? Like, they don't make the playoffs for, like, 37 years. They make it the one year, and then they haven't made it since. And you're like, what was that all about?
Well, that's a perfect microcosm of Canada.
That's like, why they don't win.
It was an all-Canadian division, and at the end of it, the Montreal Canadiens were one of the four best teams in Canada. Like, that right there is the indictment of Canada, is what it is. Like, don't complain to me that we haven't won a championship in 31 years. Well, we just went through why that's the case. You have one or two legitimate teams that can win it every single year, and usually by the end of round one, it's down to one or none.
I'm trying to figure out, because I don't remember. They beat Edmonton and Toronto to get to Vegas. Is my memory correct on that? Maybe not necessarily in that order.
So they beat Toronto in round one. Yes.
Toronto. You and, couldn't even
and
beat
not
the
only,
Canadians.
not only did they beat Toronto, but Toronto had a 3-1 series lead. And they lost three straight games. They had an opportunity to close it out in overtime in game six. They lost that, and then they just no-showed game seven.
Is that not the most Maple Leafs thing ever?
Yeah, like that was the high water mark of ineptitude for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
By the way, sure. I love the idea of an all-Canadian division. Like, I think it's cool. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you could ever do it again. At least we hope we never see something like that again. But the idea of it is pretty cool. Like, you've got, like, Edmonton and Calgary, they're in the same division. They play each other every single year. But, like, the idea and the way it was set up where you played so many games against the same teams. Like, the idea that the Leafs and Canadiens played each other eight times. And then they played seven games in the playoffs on top of the eight regular season games. Yeah.
Here's the thing. If you think they complain now about not winning Stanley Cups, if you have an all-Canadian division and the best you're guaranteed is one team in a conference final,
they wouldn't like that. Yeah.
Deafening. Yeah, it would be deafening. So I'm all for it because it'll prolong the drought. But you know, it's all everything's better here in America. Okay, we're gonna run out of time, and I don't want to run out of time. Great observations, brought to you by Leon Draisaitl.
Great observation.
That's the sponsor, I guess, for this segment. So I'm gonna start off here. It was put on my radar yesterday. Gilded Jester sent me a tweet on this, and I think that it's correct. The Edmonton Oilers cannot win this series unless they score on the power play. Like, and not only this series, but like, I don't think Edmonton can win a game if they don't score on the power play. They're two games into the Cup final. The Oilers have not scored a 5-on-5 goal so far in the final. Like, they've got one goal from a defenseman, Matthias Ekholm, and it was 4-on-4. So it's technically an even strength goal, but it is not a 5-on-5 goal. And given that the lion's share of hockey is played 5-on-5, that's a problem. The power play has been stymied by an excellent penalty kill, and they've generated next to nothing 5-on-5. So, you know, like, listen, you look at it, the Oilers have to score on the power play. And if you date back to game 4 of the Western Conference final, the Oilers have not scored a 5-on-5 goal in 4 games. They didn't score a 5-on-5 goal in game number 5. They didn't score a 5-on-5 goal in game number 6. And they have not scored a 5-on-5 goal so far in the Stanley Cup final.
Great observation.
All right. Maybe a hot take, maybe not. The Florida Panthers PK is better than the Edmonton Oilers PK. I know the numbers dictate otherwise, but when you watch the way that the Oilers or the Panthers set up their PK, they literally put sticks and bodies on everything. Like, nothing gets through. Yep. And I know that their numbers are they're almost 90% for the playoffs, and Edmonton is 93%. But when you watch them back to back, and we certainly had a lot of opportunity to watch the Edmonton PK last night because they were out there, I think, 5 times. But I just think that Florida's got better players. I think the way they set theirs up, I think it works better. And maybe some of it, when you factor in who the Panthers have played in the playoffs to get here, Boston, Tampa, the Rangers. Like, we're not talking about, like, just junk teams. Like, the Rangers' power play, I think it's maybe – I don't know what the numbers were for them on the regular season, but it had to be one of the top 2 or 3 power plays in the league, because every time you watch them and they're on the power play, it seems like they score. So –
yeah,
and then you look at what they've done so far in this series against the high-powered power play unit of Edmonton, and maybe none more evident than last night with 5 minutes to go, and Chris Knobloch pulls Stuart Skinner on the power play to make it a 6-on-4, and they still could not get good looks anything through on Bobrovsky. So for that reason, my observation is the Panthers' PK is better than the Oilers' PK.
Great observation.
Thanks, Leon. So I said my first great observation is that the Oilers can't win unless they score on the power play. My second observation is that the Oilers' power play has been underwhelming. And this goes kind of in lockstep with your assessment of the Florida Panthers penalty kill versus the Edmonton Oilers penalty kill, but it's a more systemic issue for the Oilers than just this series. Over the last 8 games, or put another way, from the start of the conference final, so when the games matter more, the Oilers have gone 4-for-18 on the power play. And listen, I get it. 22% for any other team would be excellent. It'd be great. Like, you're not talking about that being underwhelming. You're talking about that being great, especially in the playoffs when everything gets a little bit more difficult. But it's not any other team. It's the Edmonton Oilers. And the Oilers, quite frankly, cannot score at 5-on-5. And if they're not scoring on the power play at 30% or 32% or 35% like they did against LA, like they did at times against Vancouver, they are going to be hard-pressed to find offense. So, you know, again, they have to score on the power play, but at the same time, the power play has been as underwhelming for the Oilers as their 5-on-5 play has been. Offensively, this team is incredibly stagnant right now, and that is why the Edmonton Oilers are in a lot of trouble.
Great observation.
All right. Maybe kind of a funny take here, but Stuart Skinner is not the problem. Like, I went into this series thinking if Edmonton was going to lose, it was going to be because Stuart Skinner was bad. Stuart Skinner has not been bad. Like, I feel like Stuart Skinner has played well enough for Edmonton to at least have a split.
He's not been, like, excellent. He's been okay. I don't think he's been, like, over-the-top good. I don't think that he's been bad. He's been Stuart Skinner. He's been about what Stuart Skinner has been through the playoffs predominantly.
But my point is, if they got something out of other people on the team, they might have a split. Like my initial thought was the layoff was going to hurt Stuart Skinner. He was going to lose some of his confidence. He was going to lose some of his game. I don't really think he has. Like, I feel like he's the same goalie he was in the Dallas series. It's just that Edmonton, they're just not doing anything else. And so it's obviously very, very difficult to win in this league when your offense is gone, non-existent, when your blue line is getting carved up at inopportune moments. And I just feel like maybe he could steal them a game. I don't know. But I figured Stuart Skinner would be the downfall of the Edmonton Oilers. And to be honest with you, he's probably been maybe their best player. Which is saying something, because he shouldn't be their best player. Like, he shouldn't even be close to being their best player. But they've got nothing from anybody. And the guys who are supposed to be good, they haven't been. The role players, I couldn't even tell you when they're out on the ice because I never hear their names called. For that reason, I think Stuart Skinner, probably a little bit more credit than he deserves. He hasn't been great. But he hasn't been the reason why Edmonton's down in this series, and it's a great observation.
Great observation.
Am I supposed to say that? No, I don't know.
No, let Leon do it.
Okay. I'll let
it's
him
great
say
observations it. Brought to you by Leon Draisaitl. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
All right. My observation, or my next observation, is that the Panthers have more composure than the Edmonton Oilers. Oh, that's going to piss off Edmonton fans. Okay, so the Panthers, in game two, saw Luos Dranin go down the tunnel. They saw Aaron Ekblad go down the tunnel. They saw Alexander Barkov go down the tunnel. They saw Dmitry Kulikov get slashed in the nether regions. And yet, the Florida Panthers just told the Oilers to look at the scoreboard. This team has grown so much since Paul Maurice took over. Matthew Tkachuk has grown so much since Paul Maurice has taken over. There's so many moments, so many situations where the Florida Panthers would muck it up. They would do the extracurriculars. They would try to get under your skin and frustrate you with that kind of between the whistle type stuff. And now the way that Florida frustrates you is by just being better at hockey than you are. And that's what's frustrating the Oilers the most. It's not necessarily the hits. It's not necessarily the way that the Panthers play between, like, after the whistles. It is strictly the Panthers shut you down. They wear on you. They grate you. And they just take games over late because you're exhausted and you're frustrated and you're not as good as them. And that is a level of composure I didn't believe the Florida Panthers had. And it's certainly a level of composure the Edmonton Oilers do not have not found, and are no closer to finding in this series than they were at the start. So for that reason, the Florida Panthers have more composure than the Edmonton Oilers.
Great observation.
All right. I spent a little bit in the first hour of the show talking about how much I like Evan Rodriguez as a player and how I think that he's one of the most underrated players in the league and how I really wanted him here when he became a free agent. But this isn't about Evan Rodriguez. Anton Lundell might be the best player in the series that nobody talked about going into the series. Like, we talked about role players, we talked about superstars, we talked about the goalies, but somehow Anton Lundell got lost in that conversation. Now, he had a big assist last night on the second Rodriguez goal. He had a big assist against the Rangers in their closeout game with New York. But what I'm most impressed with Anton Lundell is his defensive work. Like, he is Sasha Barkov Jr. Like, when you watch him and how relentless he is in the things that he does on the defensive end as a forward, you're almost like, is that Sasha Barkov out there? I mean, it's been really fun watching him because I didn't really know a lot about him going into this series. But watching him throughout these playoffs, he's been a really good breath of fresh air for the Florida Panthers. And that's why I'm not super concerned if Sasha Barkov is unable to play, because I feel like Anton Lundell can step in and play a bigger role in the offense and the defensive end for the Florida Panthers. And if you listen to Paul Maurice talk about him, he glows about Anton Lundell. Like, he really gives him a ton of praise. And I think he's a Finn, so it would make sense that him and Barkov would kind of play together, work together, do things together. Barkov, obviously the captain of the team, so Lundell is going to listen to what he has to say, but there's probably a very close relationship between the two. But I don't really feel like, yes, there's going to be a drop-off, but I don't think it's a major concern if you ask Anton Lundell to step up and play a bigger role on Thursday night should Sasha Barkov not be able to go. I just like what he's doing on both ends of the ice, and for that reason, I feel like Anton Lundell, best player we didn't talk about going into the series.
Great observation.
That's a bold observation considering Evan Rodriguez has 3 goals in 2 games, but hey.
Well, no, I mentioned Rodriguez on Friday.
And no, I know. And not only that, but like, you are the most obsessed person I know with players that are of similar nationality. Like, you're always like, how important is it for this guy to have a guy that's from
his homeland? Yeah, I think it's huge.
And then that naturally is like ownership for Barkov to like take Lundell under his wing, and like, as if he would do that more so than any other player. But hey, you're obsessed with that talking, but it's funny. It really is.
Everyone's got their thing,
my
man.
Fourth observation. Yeah, I know you go back to that well a lot. My fourth observation is that Chris Knobloch has been taking notes on how to be a coach in the National Hockey League from Patrick Waugh. Chris Knobloch pulled his goaltender with 5 minutes and 53 seconds left in a game that they were losing 3-1. That's awesome. I love it. And then they get a power play, and he keeps Stuart Skinner on the bench. Like, hey, listen, we're going to just go the rest of this one without you, buddy. Thanks for doing your part. I appreciate it. Here's the thing. If the Oilers are facing elimination, Chris Knobloch might go 6 skaters for an entire period of hockey. Like, if they are trailing by 2 goals going into a third period, I wouldn't put it past Chris Knobloch to just go out there with 6 skaters. Like, I think that that's legitimately on the table here, and I love it. I'm here for it. It's awesome. It makes me appreciate Chris Knobloch a little bit more, though I will say my confidence in him has been shaken by his pot shot at the Buffalo Bills.
Great observation.
Thanks, Leon.
Were you surprised that they left Skinner on the bench for that power play?
No.
Knowing that Florida could...
They They generated nothing, Chapman. They generated nothing in the third period. They generated nothing in the game. Like, you're giving yourself a two-man advantage in that spot. Like, you're just trying to get something to the net. I'm not surprised at all.
All right. Yeah, I was a bit surprised because I figured, knowing that Florida up 3-1 and that they could shoot from anywhere, I mean, Bobrovsky could take a shot and they didn't have to worry about icing or anything like that, that maybe they would have kept him in there for the power play and then pulled him out again. But yeah, desperation, some serious desperation there. And the final one for me, I'll go with the Chris Knobloch theme. He's being completely outcoached in this series. Like, I thought that maybe the inexperience wouldn't really play as big of a role because he had done such a good job up to this point. But it's pretty clear that Paul Maurice is the superior head coach at this time. The experience, and maybe the experience of having been there and lost last season for Paul Maurice. I mean, he had been there once before, but it was so long ago that I think people forget that he'd been there. But the experience factor, I think it's playing a major role here. The experience of the Panthers having been here, done that. The experience of Paul Maurice throughout his entire career. Chris Knobloch, still a rookie head coach, first time going through the playoffs. I think that's playing a pretty big role because you saw it in the adjustments that were made in between game one and two. Like, early on last night, Florida completely dominated that game, had full control. And if not for a goofy penalty by Oliver Ekman-Larsson, I don't even know if Edmonton scores. Like, they may not have even have scored last night because they certainly don't look like they're going to score 5-on-5. So I think the experience of having lost, the experience of Paul Maurice, just experience overall, I think it's a much bigger factor than we thought it was going to be. And for that reason, I like the way the Panthers are playing. I like the position that they're in. The experience is a big, big factor in this series.
Great observation.
All right, here's my last one. And this should come as no surprise to anybody, and Leon's not going to be happy with me. He might pull his sponsorship of the segment here in a moment.
Why are you so pissy?
Leon Draisaitl.
Why are you so pissy?
Leon Draisaitl should not be playing Game 3. Call me soft. Tell me I don't know what I'm talking about. Like, I don't care. It's fine. Do what you got to do. I'm always going to be pro-player safety. He leaves his feet, gets his arms up, he leads with his elbow, and makes direct contact with the chin of Alexander Barkov. It's a suspension. And now the precedent for the rest of this series is that that play, that exact play, if it happens again, is a minor penalty at most. It is not suspendable. It is not a major. And you got to live with that as your consequence. I don't think it's right. I don't think it puts the safety of the players playing the game, leaving it all out there, front and center. I have a problem with that. I don't like that. I don't appreciate that. And for that reason and that reason alone, Leon Draisaitl should not be playing in Game 3.
Great observation.
All right, well, I'm glad you agree with me, Leon. It's good to know that you are on the right side of history, and we will see you. Oh, well, that's right. You are going to play Game 3 because you were not suspended by the Department of Player Safety. Take a break. Come back with one-timers next on the VGK Insider Show.
Carlson left corner. Centered. One-timer score!
It's time for one-timers. One-timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury. It's about the recovery.
One-timers, news, notes from around the National Hockey League. We're not going to spend a ton of time on hockey here. A travesty has taken place earlier today, Chapman. I don't know if you've seen this, but Joey Chestnut, yes, the Joey Chestnut, the greatest athlete of his generation, the most dominant performer of his generation, Joey Chestnut has been banned from the 4th of July Nathan's hot dog eating contest. The 16-time champion of this event has been banned from competing this year, July 4th. Why? Why has he been banned? Well, I'm glad you asked. He has been banned because he has an endorsement deal with Impossible Foods, a plant-based rival of Nathan's. And so Major League Eating, yeah, that's a thing. I looked it up. Major League Eating is saying that they have accommodated Joey Chestnut and his demands over the years, and that they've allowed him to participate in other hot dog eating contests, one most notably over Labor Day. There were some terms and conditions that needed to be met in order for him to do that, but they allowed him to do that. And this new enterprise, this new agreement, this new partnership, this new sponsorship that Joey Chestnut has entered into with Impossible Foods is overstepping the boundaries of what's acceptable for a contestant in the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. Here's the thing. Who's going to watch? Who's going to watch if Joey Chestnut, the 16-time and reigning champion of the hot dog eating contest, isn't going to participate? Who's going to watch? Nobody. Nobody's going to watch. No one's going to tune in for this. Nobody's going to care because the best in the world isn't competing. And that's a problem for Nathan's. And here's the best part. Joey Chestnut took to X to address this just a little while ago. Here's Joey Chestnut from the GOAT, from the man himself, the myth, the legend. This is what he has to say. Quote, I was gutted to learn from the media that after 19 years, I'm banned from the Nathan's July 4th hot dog eating contest. I love competing in the event. I love celebrating America with my fans all over this great country on the 4th, and I have been training to defend my title. Again, like I said, the best athlete of his generation. Joey goes on to say, to set the record straight, I do not have a contract with Major League Eating or Nathan's, and they are looking to change the rules from past years as it relates to other partners I can work with. This is apparently the basis on which I am being banned, and it doesn't impact the July 4th event. Sadly, this is the decision and Major League Eating are making, and it will deprive the great fans of the holiday's usual joy and entertainment. To my fans, I love you and I appreciate you. Rest assured that you'll see me eat again soon. Stay hungry. This is petty. This is ridiculous. This is going to hurt more than it's going to help. And it's really weird to me that Nathan's would be this insecure about a plant-based hot dog company that isn't really pushing hot dogs so much as they are hamburgers and chicken nuggets. But anyway, here's what I don't understand. You want Joey Chestnut here. You want Joey Chestnut to compete because it brings in attention. It brings eyeballs. People tune in to watch Joey Chestnut eat hot dogs. You don't want to deal with his sponsor? Fine. It's a personal sponsor. He doesn't have to go out there and wear an Impossible Food shirt. He doesn't have to go out there draped in their imagery. If you want to talk to Joey Chestnut and say, listen, go out there, compete, but we're not going to mention Impossible Foods. We're not going to sit there and let you go out there and compete with their shirt on. I'm sure he'll be fine. That's cool. Not a big deal. This is like Honda. Sponsoring the All-Star game in the National Hockey League. And then if someone's got a sponsorship with Chrysler or Jeep or Ford, Honda saying, nah, they can't play in the All-Star game. It's ridiculous. It's un-American. Nathan's, wake up. You're doing it wrong. You're going to get boycotted. It's going to happen.
Well, for starters, the idea that Joey Chestnut found this out on social media and not from Major League Eating or Nathan's directly is asinine.
Unconscionable.
Like,
yeah, it's
ridiculous. Asinine. He is the only star. Well, Mickey Sudo, I guess, is the other star. But Joey Chestnut is the biggest star in your sport. And I tune in and watch the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest every 4th of July. It is a Chapman household tradition. I've got Mrs. Chapman who never even knew what it was. Although she knew who Kobayashi was. I couldn't figure out how she knew who he was, but didn't know about the hot dog eating contest. But nonetheless, I got her watching it with me every 4th of July. You have now alienated the biggest star in your sport. And listen, there's people like me who will still tune in and watch. I'm not going to be happy about it.
I'm not watching.
The other thing is, you have now given Impossible the biggest platform. They already got their money's worth with Joey Chestnut because of you having this reaction. Like, whatever they spent to give a sponsorship to Joey Chestnut, they just made every dollar they spent worth it because now Nathan's is shedding the light on Impossible. Well, I didn't even know there were Impossible hot dogs. Like, I knew there were Impossible burgers, but I didn't know they had hot dogs. I didn't know they had chicken nuggets. Now I'm curious to see what else they have. But I could not, and I think the analogy that you gave with the All-Star game is perfect. Yes. Right? Like, I don't know, hypothetically, player has a drives to the game in a Maserati. Well, Honda sponsors it, so you can't play. That's so dumb. It's so dumb. Like, who cares? The guy's not walking out there wearing an Impossible t-shirt. He's going to be wearing a Nathan's t-shirt.
And so,
you still give him the mustard belt.
It's a personal sponsorship.
Yeah.
It should have no bearing on whether or not he can compete. And so here's what I want to see happen. I want Joey Chestnut to just go on X or Instagram 15 minutes before the hot dog eating contest starts. And I just want him to do the hot dog eating contest the way that he would do it if he was there for Nathan's. And just crush hot dogs. Crush the glizzies, as the kids say these days. And then, you've seen it. There's no reason for you to tune in at all. And here's the thing. I'll tell you this. I might watch, and I'll tell you why. The only reason that I'm going to watch the hot dog eating contest, if Joey Chestnut, if the greatest athlete of his generation is not a part of it, is because I want to watch and see if there's any other competitor to Nathan's that has ad time during that program. I want to see if they allow ad revenue to trickle in for the broadcasters that are going to be putting it on, because I'm just saying, if you're going to take a hard stance here that Joey Chestnut can't have an endorsement on the side personally with Impossible Foods, I better not see a Hebrew National commercial. I better not see an Impossible Foods commercial during that program, because then it's disingenuous. It is targeting the greatest athlete that your sport has ever seen, and it is wrong.
By the way, not so hot take. Hebrew National hot dogs are better than Nathan's anyway.
By far.
I mean, they're far superior.
It's not even a contest.
Yeah. So, listen, at the end of the day, this is a mistake by Nathan's. The overreaction, I mean, I remember back in the day when UFC, before they had corporate sponsorships, and guys would come to the octagon and they would wear shorts that were loaded with stickers and patches from all these other brands. And, my old man used to like NASCAR. He used to like to watch stock car racing. And at the time when I was a kid, it was called the Winston Cup, Winston cigarettes. They've since gotten rid of that for obvious reasons, but there were other cars that were racing in the Winston Cup that had Marlboro as a sponsor, or they could be in the Coca-Cola 600 and there's a car from Pepsi out there driving around during that race. Coca-Cola didn't say, hey, Jeff Gordon can't compete because he's got a Pepsi sponsorship on his car today. No, of course not.
Mm-hmm.
It's so dumb. Why would you alienate the only person in your sport that the average American knows? There's a guy across the hall doing a show right now. He loves this stuff. He could probably rattle off 10 guys. I know Kobayashi and Joey Chestnut and Mickey Sudo. That's it. Those are the only ones I know. 90% of our audience. Those
travesty.
Are, Joey Chestnut was on The Amazing it's a travesty. Race. He does television yes. commercials. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing, Nathan?
He is a well-oiled athlete. Like a well-oiled said, athlete
there is
and a beacon of hope.
The most
a beacon of hope for America.
Dominant athlete in the history of sports.
Yes.
Like it's not
absolutely
like Babe Ruth? Nah. We should be saying Joey Chestnut.
Michael Jordan?
Nope.
Come on.
Wayne
Michael
Gretzky?
Jordan? I don't want to hear that.
Come on. Nah. There's only one great one, and it's Joey Chestnut.
He's got 16 more titles than Wayne Gretzky and Mark Messier combined.
That's incredible.
Let that sink in.
Wait, he's won 22?
You're going to ban him.
He's won. Oh, my gosh. That's unbelievable. 16
you're gonna
straight.
You're going to ban
straight.
Him.
Yeah. Yeah. You're out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's ridiculous. Unreal. I can't even believe it. I will never. I mean this. I will never eat a Nathan's hot dog again. It's just wrong. Just plain wrong. Those are your one-timers for today, Tuesday, June 11th. Catching Up with Chapman is next.
When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
All right, Ryan. So I just saw this tweet, and I guess we'll have to talk to Jesus and see how he feels about this, but Mexican Soccer League, it's obviously very, very big, very popular. The two most popular teams are a team called Chivas, who Jesus supports, and a team called Club America. Chivas is from Guadalajara, Club America from Mexico City, so obviously two very big cities, a little bit of a rivalry between the cities, and so it translates to the teams as well. Well, it was announced today that these two teams will be playing they call it the Clásico, in Southern California this year. They're not going to play the biggest game of the season in Mexico. Like, I could not imagine any sport in the United States or, you know, like the NHL taking the Stanley Cup final and moving it to Germany or France or Sweden and saying, oh, here we go, guys, Stanley Cup final. Like, there would be riots in the streets. So when I see this news about the two biggest teams in Mexico playing their big game outside of Mexico, it just doesn't sit right with me. And I'm sure there's a financial reason behind it. But Azteca Stadium, where they normally play, holds like 100,000 people. So I can't imagine that they're going to play it at a stadium that holds more than what Azteca Stadium holds. But nonetheless, they're playing that game in California this year.
It'd be like doing the hot dog eating contest in Canada.
Blasphemy.
Wild. We'll be with you tomorrow.